Hey guys, how's it going? Oh, good. I'm Scott Horton. Welcome to my show. It's the Scott Horton Show. Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks. All right, so you heard it. That was my pitch. Fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. scotthorton.org/donate, scotthorton.org/raffle. And also check out in the right-hand margin there, you will now find a link to the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me. Just came out the other day, and it's on Audible, it's on Amazon, and at least should be on iTunes as well. I should double-check that. In fact, I should double-check that right now. Fascism versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell. Man, there's a little sugar ant crawling on my arm. It tickled. It didn't really bite me, but still, trespassing. All right, let's see. iTunes. Fascism versus Capitalism. Hey, there you go. Let's see what comes up here. And then, view in iTunes. There you go. Does it say narrated by me here? Is this the same thing? Better should be. This is for iBook. So this is like the Kindle version, I guess. This is not the audio. I'm looking at the wrong one. Maybe I should search audiobook. Anyway, soon enough it'll be on iTunes anyway. If it's not right now, should be. Anyway, you can find the link to it at audible.com. Right there in the right-hand margin of my website, scotthorton.org. And hey, while you're there, join up the chat room. It's scotthorton.org/chat. And then you can hang out with Fitzy G and the boys. He's asking after that Basevich link. I got it for you. You know, I never did get around to watching this. But I do have the link here because Basevich linked to it in his piece. Right? Where is it at? Network Television News Program. Yeah, that's the one right there. All right. So scotthorton.org/chat. That's where the boys hang out during the show. That's where I respond with links if you need one. Or you guys can provide me with links sometimes when I need them. It's nice. scotthorton.org/chat. Also, it's IRC Freenode chat. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. That's also how you follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. And on YouTube, at Scott Horton Show. And I abandoned my Facebook page more than a year ago now, but it's there at Scott Horton Show. And, all right, cool. And retweet me, for God's sake, man. Tell them about the show. It's on. Now, some people only like the interviews, and they just, I don't care about this Horton dude or what he thinks at all. I like them interviews, though. Other people wish the interview would hurry up and end so they can hear me talk more. I think you guys probably got a screw loose. I side with the former category there, who'd rather hear me interview somebody else. Well, I sent out a bunch of invites. It ain't my fault that they all didn't answer, other than Gareth, who did answer but is unavailable today. Okay, maybe it is my fault. But I have no guests for you today. But I do have a ton of stuff to complain about. You know why? Because America's got a foreign policy. And I'm against it. And I'm trying to get you to be against it, too. I think it's important. So, today on the show, Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, Israel, Palestine, the Iran deal, Ukraine, and some other stuff. All right. Yeah. There you go. Scott Horton Show. And I guess, yeah, when we get back from the other side of this break, we'll start with Afghanistan, something that I haven't been covering nearly enough on this show. And, but it's still on. The Democrats somehow made you think that that war was over. It ain't. Obama tripled it, and then, boy, he sure did pull out 90% of the troops, man. I mean, they really did pack their crap up and go. The surge ended on schedule, but it accomplished nothing. So there's still 10,000 troops there, somewhere on that order, plus whatever number of mercs. And the Afghan army actually does exist, apparently to a much greater degree than the Iraqi army ever really did. Well, I don't know much. To a greater degree. But still, of course, completely dependent on American money to make the whole thing go. And probably a lot of American leadership in their officer ranks as well. So, that war's not over, and we got big news breaking out of there. So, I guess I really owe you guys an apology for not keeping up with Afghanistan news nearly as much. You know, to a degree, I suffer from the same problem as the rest of us, you know, stuck on the mainstream narrative. You know, I'm trying to debunk it, but a lot of the time they pick the subjects, you know what I mean? Well, today, so Afghanistan's in the news because there's big news, so we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, man, so either way, whether you're one of them who prefer the me part or the interview part or the third way, which is you like them both the same. It's all the same Scott Horton Show to you. If you like the show, then typically my experience is the people who like the show, they really love it and really value it. And they never heard a radio host who was good on every single thing that he said before. It's amazing, isn't it? And so, yeah, you guys are great. There are a few of you. I ain't gonna lie. Millions of people listen to the show every day. No. Few do. My listenership is, you know, very enthusiastic, very deep, but very narrow. And so, but for those of you who like this show and want there to continue being a show, you gotta help. And you know what I really need more than anything else is advertisers. If I had enough advertisers, if I did enough work trying to round up advertisers, really is what I should say. Take personal responsibility and all that. But, if I had enough advertisers, then I wouldn't fundraise at all. I only fundraise because I got to. And if I just barely was able to get by without it at all, I would just get by without it all. Because I don't like it. I don't like sound like NPR boy up here begging. But the deal is, need money. There's a buzz in this there equipment, and a lot of this has got to get fixed. This mic is all worn out. I got quiet as I can get it is negative 63, and that's just not good enough. There are other technical problems going on here. I still need new servers. We're on temporary borrowed servers right now from the big catastrophe. What happened when half of y'all quit listening to the show ever again when the site was down for 2 weeks there? Yeah, so that's got to get taken care of, and I got to get the wife home to, well, not home, but to Florida to see her family and these kinds of things. So whatever, cost of living, man. Just because they say the CPI is only this or that percent, man, you and I both know better than that. Need money. This here show is a business, just like the rest of the businesses that are businesses. Sorry. I do it out of the goodness of my heart. I could be doing other work. But I gotta live. The show must go on.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Oops, I wasn't supposed to be so loud, sir.
This is it. Dope from the fly kid. The ice mic is back with the high bid. Suckers, you lost the players, you're not.
In the chat room, they're talking about how Ice-T pulled Cop Killer off the later versions of, I think it's the self-titled Body Count album, the first album. What a sellout. You played yourself, Ice-T. You half-ass, lame-ass actor who always plays a cop on TV. Oh, man. What a disappointment he turned out to be, huh? All right, well. I don't care. I'm playing this thing again.
Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks. All right. Enough of that. For now. Taliban attack on Afghan parliament in Kabul ends. Coordinated attack. Taliban attack on the Afghan parliament in Kabul has ended with all six gunmen killed, the Interior Ministry says. Attackers detonated a huge car bomb outside the gates, stormed the compound, then entered a building next to the chamber. Police evacuated the premises while trying... The premises? Sorry. Premises is different. Check your premises. While trying to fight the gunmen off, the Taliban said they carried out the attack to coincide with a vote to endorse a new defense minister. Oh, they're getting rid of Dostum! The spokesman for the Interior Ministry, Sadiq Siddiqui, said the gunmen had attempted to storm the parliament building itself after the gates were breached by the suicide bomb. They were fought off and entered a building under construction next to the parliament. MPs were showered with broken glass, and the chamber filled with smoke as the fighting went on. It took nearly an hour before all the firing stopped. It took over an hour. At least 18 people are reported to have been wounded. Mr. Siddiqui said no MP had been injured. Pictures on social media showed Parliament full of smoke and people running for cover. Parliamentary chamber could be seen as full of smoke. Television was broadcasting live from the parliament building when the attackers struck. MPs were seen fleeing the building. Even by Afghan standards, these were very dramatic scenes, and police had a complex operation on their hands, says the BBC's David Loyne in Kabul. the Taliban were extracting maximum propaganda advantage by doing it on the day that Parliament was meeting to consider the appointment of a new defense minister, Masoom Stankazai. Our correspondent says, I'm reading the BBC here, local media reported another explosion in the Damazang area of Kabul city. The Taliban have launched complex attacks on government buildings in the capital in the past. They have made substantial gains recently in Helmand in the southwest and have been advancing across the north of the country, capturing two districts of the Kunduz province in recent days. Militant violence has increased across the country since the departure of most U.S. and NATO forces last year. Oh, that's a nice little spin at the end. Yeah, before the Americans left, violence was way on the wane, right, guys? Oh, no, that's not right. Yeah, during the surge, that was when there was the most violence of all. And then as the Americans left, now there's less violence. Maybe a slight uptick, but compared to full-scale war, really? Give me a break. And yeah, here from Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Taliban offensive nears major northern Afghan city of Kunduz. Government tries to downplay losses, claiming gains elsewhere. Afghan officials today confirmed that the Taliban offensive against Kunduz province, launched back in April, has successfully expanded to take control of the entire Chardara district, leaving the forces closer to Kunduz itself, a city of 300,000 people. Afghan military officials reported 70 troops remain surrounded in the district and promised to launch a new military offensive soon to retake it. The fear, however, is that the momentum in Kunduz is going the other way and the city is in serious jeopardy. Afghan officials are trying to take the focus off of Kunduz, however, announcing that they took over Yamgan district in... Oh, man, come on. Are you guys just messing with me now? Badakhshan province in a major gain. This claim was immediately thrown into doubt, however, as they announced they retook the same district only a week prior. I love Jason Ditz, man. He's great. The loss of Kunduz would be a huge blow to the Afghan government, as the north is traditionally their power base, while the Taliban is mostly dominant in the south. Kunduz's proximity to the Tajik border is also raising concern about smuggling possibilities. So, yeah, there you go. And yeah, by the way, you know, assuming you're listening to this live, you're listening to this live on June the 22nd, 2015, 1-5. So, yep. Afghan war still raging on there. This one says 19 civilians killed in South Afghanistan roadside bombing. 14 of the slain were from the same family. You know, well, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here, man. I guess they're giving up. You got to admit, Romney, McCain, the Republicans, they, I mean, assuming that they didn't get us all killed in a nuclear war with the Russians. Well, I don't know if Romney would have done that. McCain certainly would have. But anyway, think you got to admit that they would want to stay in greater numbers than this. But it's going to be pretty hard to surge back into Afghanistan. Same kind of problem with Iraq right now. Reinvade after leaving. But, you know, 10,000 left ain't leaving. 10,000 is still 10,000. And that still is the door open to re-escalation. But why? Other than to keep you from asking the question why you ever gave a crap if America defeated the Taliban and prevented them from ever being the government of Afghanistan again in the first place. This is the biggest fool's errand in the whole world, and anybody could have told you in 2001. It's the only reason to stay is to not have to have that conversation. Why did we stay up until now?
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey, y'all. How's it going? Okay, good. All right, swear to God I'm not going to spend a whole segment on this or anything. But I can't help but mention. I mean, what are you going to do? It's an election year, man. Afghanistan is the perfect example of why pandering to the war party won't work for Rand Paul. Well, why half-assing it all the time is a loser strategy. Taliban attacked Kabul today. Are you for doing what it takes to destroy the Taliban and prevent them from ruling Afghanistan, or aren't you? So what's the answer to that? Oh, well, you know, it's interesting, maybe a little bit, and we'll just leave 10,000 troops there for a little while and do some anti-terror training, but the Afghans should do most of the work, and who's that going to please? It's not going to please the war party. They can't take that to the bank. And if I'm any measure of his father's fans, which I guess I'm not, I don't know. I think I am to some degree. Sure going to piss us off.
Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Puriscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle.
All right. So now back to business. Yemen peace talks collapse as pro-Saudi faction withdraws. Yemen foreign minister complains Houthis didn't agree to demands. The Yemen peace talks being held in Geneva effectively ended today, and this was written on the 19th, so Friday, I guess, with the announcement that the pro-Saudi Hadi faction will withdraw from the talks and return to exile in Saudi Arabia, which is presently attacking Yemen with the goal of reinstalling them as the government. The talks began inauspiciously last Monday, with demands from the Hadi faction for the Houthis to surrender all cities in the country as a condition for discussing an end to Saudi airstrikes. Yemen FM Foreign Minister Riyad Yassin complained today that the Houthis didn't comply with any of their demands. It is unsurprising that the talks are collapsing at this point, as yesterday's press conference by the Houthis ended in fistfights when the Hadi faction attacked them, throwing shoes at the delegates addressing the assembled media. The Saudis never really stopped their airstrikes during the talks and continued with the talks today after the lack of resolution. UN officials expressed disappointment in the process, noting the Hadi and Houthi factions never even sat down at the same table during the 5 days, and insisted the UN transfer messages back and forth. The only time they were even in the same room was during Thursday's brawl. You know, man. Oh, and by the way, Saudi airstrike kills 15, including civilians across northern Yemen. 5 women, 2 children slain in attacks. That's also at news.antiwar.com. And this thing is amazing. You know, it's rare that you see a war where it's so obvious from the very beginning that the stated goals, I think even we can assume the actual goals, could not possibly be accomplished by the chosen means. It couldn't be more clear. And maybe the Saudis thought, oh yeah, no problem, we'll just send in the armed forces
you know, the land army of Pakistan and Egypt, and they'll take care of it for us. Except that Pakistan and Egypt said, no, we're not doing that. The Saudis don't have a big infantry, you know, they don't have an army, really. They have a National Guard for keeping the locals down, and they have an Air Force full of a bunch of big-ticket Lockheed products. But that's it. And so, who's going to win this war for them? Who is going to regime change Sana? The only possible answer to that, within, you know, the realm of physics and reality of the earth we live on, would be Al-Qaeda. If the Saudis were to just outright back them, you know, in a Obama in Libya kind of a way, we're just, we are your air force at your service, Zawahiri. Who should we bomb? If that's what they want to do, then I guess maybe that could work, but it doesn't seem like that's making any progress. As Daniel Larrison explained on the show, the more they bomb the Houthi government, the more the people of Yemen take the Houthi government side. And the more, tell me if you can figure out the calculus, as they call it in Washington, D.C. here. The more the Saudis bomb them to try to put Hadi back in power, the less they like the Saudis and Hadi. And the less they want him back in power. Well, see, you got to carry the three and then divide by the two and then college algebra three. And then it's really complicated, you see. The atmospherics of the calculus. The Yemenis don't like being killed and seeing their family members killed and seeing their neighborhoods destroyed. And they hate the people who are doing it. The Saudis, and then, of course, that includes us. I mean, not you and me, but the empire that we live under, they live under too. And they know that. They've taken, you know, at the time of 9/11, Al-Qaeda in Yemen was Hani Hanjour's father-in-law and his dozen friends, right? And then we started bombing them. Now they're a movement. And now America is backing the Saudis in the war against Al-Qaeda's greatest enemy in Yemen, the Houthis. Barack Obama, for the third time now, flying in direct support of the Mujahideen. Oh, well, no, I guess second time flying. Third time outright backing them. Libya, Syria, and Yemen now. Now, we're still backing the Iranian factions against the Mujahideen in Iraq, if that supposedly makes it better. But I gotta wonder I gotta wonder about Obama's calculus here. Does he not know that he could just come right out and do whatever he wants on this issue, and that if he just even made the case once, the American people would take his side? Look, I told the Saudis, knock it off. We're not helping you, and this isn't helping the situation, and stop the war. Well, the American people are gonna side with Lindsey Graham against him on that? When all he has to say is, look, we don't necessarily like the Houthis, but we've done business with them before, and they're opposed to Al-Qaeda in Yemen. So, those are the breaks. Argue against that, Lindsey Graham. Let's hear your great argument for flying as Al-Qaeda's Air Force in Yemen. All right, that's what I thought. Then shut up. That's all he has to do. He's our Commander-in-Chief, as Americans love to repeat, even though, no, he's merely the chief executive of departments created by Congress, and he's the Army and the Marine Corps and the Navy and the Air Force's Commander-in-Chief. And the CIA. No, maybe not. Maybe they're his, but anyway. If he got up there and said, hey, look, I don't want to do this Yemen war because it benefits our enemies, the American people would say, okay. Jeez. Imagine that, Obama being less for backing our enemies than the Republicans for a change. Anyway, I don't know why he keeps doing this other than, you know, he's evil and political interests and he's trying to get his Iran deal passed, and so he gotta help the Saudis get away with absolute bloody murder. And by the way, and I should have better sourcing for this, but the Wall Street Journal did a great job proving that this is America's war. It's American ships. American AWACS running the whole damn thing, picking targets and the rest.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you can hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. And they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the goddamn thing here, man. All right, so like I was saying, I guess a big part of the reason of Obama's decision to go ahead and fully support and help coordinate Saudi's war in Yemen, it couldn't possibly turn out the way they say, you know, with the results that they say they're trying to accomplish, war in Yemen, is he's trying to get this damn Iran deal done. And this is the Saudis' bribe. Just shut up about the Iran deal for a minute while he gets the Iran deal, I guess. Like, America can't just tell the Saudis to shut up anyway? Come on. I mean, I'm not saying that the kingdom there are just the abject sock puppets of the Americans in the most Mubarakian kind of way, but pretty damn much. We got a lot of carrots that we can threaten to take away. The American government has a lot of sway over the Saudis. But, man, just kiss their ass. Otherwise, the Americans are perfectly happy to back the Houthis or Al-Qaeda or anybody else in Yemen. They don't care. Saleh or Hadi or whoever. The Americans don't care about Yemen. But they'll do anything to Yemen. They'll kill any Yemeni kid for being a Yemeni kid if that's what the Saudis want so they can get their Iran deal. And that's ridiculous. I mean, for Christ's sake. They've had spinning centrifuges in Iran for 10 years. Now you're going to have double extra super clarified expanded inspections. They're going to be safeguarded, capital S, quotes, legal term, safeguarded beyond reason. Now, they're going to reduce their centrifuge capacity from X to X minus 5,000 spinning centrifuges. It's actually going to be back down to, they're over 10,000 now. They're going to be down to 5 again. They're going to, well, I'm not going through all the damn details. They're completely rolling back their nuclear program in 10 major ways. They're allowing expanded inspections beyond reason, but Saudi is supposed to be more concerned about their nuclear program now than this whole time that they've been expanding it and expanding it and expanding it because there was no deal, because the Americans wouldn't make a damn deal with them. Even though they've been trying since 2001 and then especially with the golden offer of 2003 to make a deal with us. Well, Ahmadinejad was a little bit more difficult problem to work with there for quite a few years, I guess. But still, they weren't in violation of their safeguards agreement the entire time. Maybe it would have been harder to strike an expanded deal under his regime, but not really. I mean, if the Supreme Leader wanted an agreement for an additional protocol, it could do that. But anyway, we're supposed to buy the lie that Israel, Saudi, and whatever other Arabian states are supposed to be more worried about Iran now, that they're rolling their program back, that it's going to be more safeguarded and inspected and verified and guaranteed than ever before. Bull. Just tell them to shut up. Tell them to go pound sand if they don't like it.
Look, we've been hanging the fake nuclear controversy over Iran's head for long enough now. It's grown thin. We're going to go ahead and cut a deal and lift the sanctions. But don't worry, we're not going to ally with them or anything. So just be quiet for a little while, Saudi. Obama can't tell Kerry to tell Saudi that. He's got to fight a war for them in Yemen to make up for the fact that he's making peace with their neighbor. Whatever. And, yeah, you know, I don't know. Sure, I guess the Saudis have something to lose for the lifting of the sanctions and the increase of Iranian financial power in the region or, you know, whatever. They'll have less of a lock on OPEC cartel quotas. But, you know, the market has already kind of worked its way around OPEC anyway, hadn't it? I mean, it's kind of a state-run market around the world, oil, but lots of different states running. So, in a sense, competing for a global oil price in a way that Saudi can't really dictate anyway. And they try some, but anyway. Waging a war for them just to make them feel better about the Iranian nuclear program that itself ought to be making them feel better is, it's horrifying. This is no argument for the Republicans to say that Barack Obama should be removed from office and prosecuted for murder here. I mean, what the hell is he doing? How about for treason? Flying again as the Air Force of Ayman al-Zawahiri's men. It's crazy. And what Bush did for al-Qaeda by invading Iraq and turning all of western and northwestern Iraq into Sunni jihadistan there for all those years, creating 10,000 bin Ladens, as Hosni Mubarak's sock puppet warned would happen. That was bad, but that was really stupid, okay? They were tricked into it by the Iranians, who sent Chalabi to tell all of the pro-Israel traitors in Washington, D.C. that getting rid of Saddam would be good for Israel, when what he meant was will be good for Iran. And they're stupid idiots and told Bush it was going to be great, and he wanted to do it anyway, so he could try to prove to his dad that he was tougher than him, when all he really proved was he was even dumber than him. And anyway, Oh, I know what I was going to say. There's good news about the Iranian deal too, though. And that is that, John Kerry walked out on crutches. I think it was, you know, he gave a little statement at the hospital and said, in answer to a question, I might be confused in this, but anyway, John Kerry did say they're dropping the PMD. That is the possible military dimensions. That is a bunch of bogus, red herring, fake-ass accusations, most of them invented by the Israelis, about Iranian past nuclear weapons work. And most of it is a bunch of crap, and one of the huge outstanding issues of the nuclear negotiations was whether the Iranians are going to have to answer for a bunch of forgeries, which they had never been confronted with face-to-face because they would be able to easily debunk them. And so what are they going to do about this? And it was America that climbed down. God dang, John Kerry said, well, you know, we know what they did, and we're more interested in what they do in the future. And, whew, man, can you imagine if we cover this on the show with Gareth a few times and so forth. Can you imagine if the whole process had broken down based on the Americans were going to continue to insist that the Iranians answer a bunch of questions based on what are already debunked forgeries? Israeli forgeries of the so-called smoking laptop, the alleged studies. Boy, would that have been a scandal to the few people who would understand and care. But no, man, so that's really good news, guys. I think that really means there's going to be a nuclear deal, and that in and of itself is good. Now, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Maybe making a de facto peace by putting to bed the biggest fake outstanding issue between America and Iran, maybe that's enough to set the Saudis on a killing spree, man. Maybe they're going to go completely crazy and give the Islamic State $100 billion. And I don't know. But in and of itself, it is absolutely the right thing for America to drop the pretense that there is a scandal regarding Iran's nuclear program at all. The pretense that they ever were making nuclear weapons, ever had a nuclear weapons program of any kind, or that they even know how to make one. I guess they could probably make a simple gun-type uranium nuke, but then how to deliver it? Freaking thing is humongous. And anyway, they could never do it without the whole world knowing that they were trying. And there's no reason to believe that this whole thing is anything but a manufactured crisis, like Gareth Porter put it in the title of his book. And so anyway, I think, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it's not right that America has all these sanctions on the people of Iran and their economy and all the suffering that our government and the United Nations and the Europeans and whoever else put them through in these sanctions over a giant fake scandal over their nuclear program. And I don't want the American government to be allies with Iran like it's been fighting for them in Iraq for the last 13 years. But I don't want a Cold War against them either. And, so it's time to end this thing, and I guess looks like they're probably going to do it. Reza Marashi wrote this thing, Ending the Iranian-Saudi Cold War. I'm going to interview him about it in a couple of days here. Prospects for peace. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys. I'm me. This is the thing. Here, listen to this again. Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks. All right, you guys, yeah, this is the show. I'm Scott. Don't you want a trip to Costa Rica? Good. All right. Yeah, it's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And, you know, I don't know what to make of this, man. Whatever. Gareth Porter, he's smart. And the numbers bear him out, really, right? I was wrong, dude. I was just certain that America was going to reinvade Iraq. I mean, what the hell? He got Bin Laden incarnate up there on the balcony, declaring himself the ruler of all Sunnis in the world. Got hundreds of people every day traveling there to join. And I'm not saying I support it. I don't think the U.S. government should exist at all. But I'm just saying my estimation was that the, you know, politics in D.C. would be, well, we got to kill this guy, man. We got to carpet bomb Mosul. We got to send in the Marines. We got to do whatever it takes to make it where there is no caliphate. We're canceling your caliphate. You ain't get to have no caliphate. And I couldn't imagine that the American government would not have reacted that way and immediately. And you know what? As I've been joking, I think it's true and funny. That's why it's a joke. It's funny because it's true. If it wasn't for America's treasonous pro-Israel foreign policy that has the empire all divided and mixed up and fighting against itself all over the place in the Middle East, things would be a lot more cut and dry, a lot simpler, and we would have a worse war with the Islamic State right now. The problem is, if we do that, we're objectively helping Assad. And Israel can't have that. And so America can't have that. And so we have this muddle. Thank God, right? Think of how much worse it would be. That's why it's funny, right, is the irony of the situation. This pro-Israel treason preventing a worse war for the first time ever. But then, sorry, thirsty. But then the thing of it is, yeah, I mean, I was just wrong. And I don't know, I guess I can't chalk it all up to pro-Israel politics in D.C. either. I had missed this article, but I never miss one by Gareth Porter. So Gareth Porter's got a new one, Why the U.S. Military Opposed New Combat Roles in Iraq. And he's referring to a story published in the Washington Post on the 13th of June that I had not seen, called In White House's Iraq Debate, Military Brass Pushed for Doing Less. And now I should say before I get too far into this that Obama just sent another 400, 500 troops, 450, something right around there, to be advisors, to help to coordinate. But here's what Gareth Porter says. This is at MiddleEastEye.net. The story published in the Washington Post on the 13th of June shows how the U.S. military service chiefs, who make decisions on war policy in light of their own institutional interests, prefer an inconclusive war with IS and existing constraints on U.S. involvement to one with even the most limited U.S. combat role. The resistance of top U.S. military officials to deepening U.S. military involvement in the war against the Islamic State came in the wake of a major policy debate within the Obama administration following the collapse of Iraqi military resistance in Ramadi. In that debate, senior State Department officials reportedly supported the option of putting U.S. advisors into Iraqi combat units to direct airstrikes on Islamic State positions and sending U.S. Apache attack helicopters into urban combat situations. But the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, joined top military commanders in opposing that option, again proposed by the State Department. The Post story recounted, Dempsey was said to have concluded that the potential gains from such an escalation were not worth the costs in terms of possible U.S. combat losses. The result of that internal debate was that Obama sent 450 more advisors to Iraq, but only to bases removed from the Islamic State combat zone. Although Obama was reported to be keeping future options open, the constraints on the U.S. military effort appear to reflect an alignment between the White House and the U.S. military establishment against a U.S. ground combat role in the battle against the Islamic State. Obama's concern to prevent the war against the Islamic State from involving U.S. ground combat troops was clear from the outset. The White House, I thought he was going to do it anyway. The White House appeared to be guarding against pressure for a combat role by suggesting that Islamic State is a deeply rooted organization and thus could not be defeated through U.S. military action. And even after domestic political pressures for a major military action developed within the Islamic State, with the Islamic State beheading of two Americans, Obama sought to avoid calling the U.S. airstrikes against the Islamic State war, choosing instead to call them a counterterrorism strategy. Like many other observers, when the U.S. began its bombing campaign against the Islamic State targets last August, that's Gareth Porter writing here, was certain that the bombing wouldn't have any decisive effect on the Islamic State forces, and feared that the logic of escalation that had operated in the failed wars in Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan would also apply in the war against the Islamic State. But the U.S. military does not view every war in the same way. The military's position in regard to a given proposal for war is based on a set of calculations that may be crude, but do follow a certain logic. Military leaders are neither disinterested servants of the commander-in-chief, as portrayed in official mythology, nor agents of corporate business seeking control over the world's resources, as the left has traditionally viewed them. And then he goes on into, they care about themselves! That's what they care about. But anyway, here's my point. I think he's right. They really don't want to do it. I think that Washington Post story must be correct. That the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff lined up with, nah, let's just bomb them. Now, they know, and I'm not saying that that's a holy and peaceful view or anything like that. In that sense, I think they really are, to a great degree, arms salesmen, brokers, helping to empty inventories and fill them back up again and then empty them again. Flying their planes and dropping their bombs. That is a big part of their role. And so they're happy to keep doing that. But they don't want to get, they want to fly high. They don't want to risk getting shot down. And they don't want to send in the damn Marine Corps or the Army to do it. And here's the real point. Wow, check out how dishonest the argument against Saddam Hussein was back then. When you're looking at basically bin Laden himself, might as well be, ruling all of western and northwestern Iraq and eastern Syria and calling himself the caliph of the Islamo-fascist caliphate, and the U.S. military's like, nah, I don't know, whatever. I mean, I guess we can bomb him for a while, but it's not like we're going to send in 150,000 men, 300,000 men to invade the place and occupy it and fix it. But they're willing to do that against Saddam? The guy with the clean-shaven chin and the beret and the olive green who used to work for Ronald Reagan and could have been hired by George W. Bush with the snap of his fingers again? Bastards. And yeah, he was a killer, but no threat to this country whatsoever. Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton again. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support The Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verd Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Puriscal, Costa Rica. And he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. ScottHorton.org/raffle. All right. So now, yeah, more show. Prothro, man, I'm working on getting him back on the show. He had this great write-up now 2 weeks ago. He's been traveling around and hard to get a hold of. But now 2 weeks ago, this article is a pretty dang good article, man, writing up, an estimate on the Islamic State as it is now. How much money are they making? How much territory are they holding? Where are they retreating? Where are they surging? How well are they doing? And I admit, actually it's been a little while since I read the War Nerd on this. I'd like to see what he said lately. But I definitely want to look at the Islamic State from more of a War Nerd point of view. You know who I'm talking about? Gary Brecher, John Dolan, writes for... Yeah, he's got three names. War Nerd is his name. He writes for Pando. And, before that, The Exiled. And anyway, he's a really smart guy, man. He knows about every war on this planet, every conflict on this planet. He's a walking encyclopedia on that thing.
And, you know, his attitude was always, these guys are scum, and they're such scum that they'll never be nothing but scum, and they're militia fighters. But watch them hold the position for a minute and then turn to vapor as a F-18 flies by and drops a bomb on them. It's really hard to go from a militia to a real state. And these guys are such a bunch of, you know, uneducated school shooter types that how could they possibly ever really be very successful? You know, that kind of attitude. It's nothing but Al-Qaeda in Iraq is what we're talking about here. Zarqawis, berserkers. How the hell are they supposed to be able to hold on to a bunch of territory, you know? And they're a bunch of goons. And when everybody was saying, oh my God, Islamic State might take Baghdad, which if you were listening to this show, I never bought that just because look at the numbers, man. But that was what Brecher said too, was they're not going to take Baghdad. Even if they could cut it off for a little while or whatever, they have no way of conquering Shiistan. Now, declaring independence for Sunnistan, that's one thing. But, and maybe even kicking Shia out from where they're left at all in predominantly Sunni areas, which is, you know, not very many people anyway. But actually take Baghdad? No way. It took the Army and the Marine Corps to help the Badr Brigade take Baghdad. It took years of fighting to kick all the Sunnis out and take that city for the Shiite militias. So how the hell is the Islamic State going to walk back in there with a few suicide bombs and a few thousand men? Anyway, so I like his perspective on this. Like I said, it's been a little while since I read it. But then on the other hand, I got my main man and yours, Patrick Coburn. And Coburn from the very beginning has said, you know, hey, look out for these guys. And he's even pro-war against them. I mean, he would like to see not a full-scale invasion. I'm not exactly sure what he has in mind, but you can tell, and he's a reporter, so a lot of times he doesn't make judgment calls on these kinds of things, but he certainly analyzes the whole situation from the point of view of what can be done to rid the world of this menace. These guys, they are happy to admit what genocidal lunatics they are. If, you know, if they could, they'd kill every last Shia on the planet. And his estimate of how much power they have, I think, is much closer to Prothero's, or Prothero's is much closer to Coburn's, that, hey, they got, I don't know, somewhere around 100,000 men, maybe more. They got hundreds of people moving there every day to join up and help. They've got conscription, and they've got taxation, and they've got the makings of a state in Mosul, Raqqa, and in Fallujah, and in the places where they control. I guess Ramadi is kind of a, you know, newly taken over. But in the places where they've been ruling for a while, they have a civil court system, they got traffic cops, and they got the local Democrats running around, you know, banning people from smoking and all this kind of thing. And I think Liz Sly from the Washington Post, who I admit she's got a Washington Post point of view about a lot of things. Then again, she's lived in the Middle East for a hell of a long time, and she knows a hell of a lot of things. And Coburn endorses her, not necessarily her every bit of writing, but her credibility and intellect as a Middle East reporter anyway, from the amount of time that she spent over there and how well he knows her, I guess. And she wrote this thing, and I know the headline was stupid. The headline was so overdone as to make you think, shut up, stupid Washington Post, I hate you, and then flip on. Because the headline was, oh, Saddam Hussein's hidden hand behind the Islamic State. What? Oh, that's why you had to invade in 2003, because one day after you invaded in 2003, it would turn into this, and it would all be Saddam's fault, not yours, huh, Washington Post? You bastards. Gah. Would you like to see that newspaper hang from a lamppost? Me too. Anyway, not them favoring in favor of government censorship, because I'm not. But anyway, so the headline was so stupid and overblown and ridiculous, they probably got that idiot Fred Hyatt to write the headline. But anyway, the article was good, and the article was about how the Islamic State, the successors to Zarqawi's Al-Qaeda in Iraq, they made a deal with the, you know, what was left of the organized officer corps of the old Ba'ath Party army. And they said, you guys run the state and run the military, and we will be the heads of state, and we will be in charge of the population. And they said, deal. So, you know, there's a great, man, I'm not going to be able to remember his name now. Farwan,
He wrote this great thing we ran at antiwar.com, and I interviewed him about it. We're friends on Twitter and stuff like that. This guy wrote this thing about the rise of the Islamic State, where he said, so you have the Ba'athists, you have the Bin Ladenites, and then you have the tribal system. And the tribal system is, you know, what's traditional, but it's got, you know, a lot of flaws in it, in that the people at the bottom of the pyramid in the tribal system are really basically, you know, like the lowest caste. They get no women, they get no good jobs, they get no nothing, and the leaders of the tribes take it all for themselves, and that leaves a lot of dejected young men, you know, ripe for the plucking for the other centers of power in, you know, I guess at that point he's discussing mostly Iraqi Sunni Stan, you know, and how, so you basically, you know, it's like the Sith. There's always got to be two because the third, if there's three, the two will gang up on the third kind of thing, right? So you got the tribal leadership, you have the Bin Ladenites, and you have the Ba'athists. And, you know, I guess you could argue for a time the Ba'athists and the tribal leaders ganged up against Al-Qaeda, but now those tables have turned, and it's Al-Qaeda and the Ba'athists against the tribes.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm me. It's my show. Oh, I'm Scott Horton. It's the Scott Horton Show. Yeah. I'm here on the Liberty Radio Network live from noon to 2 Eastern Time. LibertyRadioNetwork.com, LRN.FM, same difference. Ah, hell, what the hell? I'm going to hit this thing again, dude. I got to. Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica. And he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle.
All right, guys.
Man, I love this. Former deputy director of the CIA, Michael Morell, who is, oh my God, the things that this man is responsible for and should be hanging for. But anyway, former deputy director of the CIA, Michael Morell, tells the Jerusalem Post that Al-Qaeda is more dangerous to the West than ISIS. Guys, quote, don't make deals with them. Pressure them. Fight them. Turn against them. Otherwise, they will turn against you. Holy crap. Wouldn't that be funny if that was the headline, the top headline above the fold at the New York Times this morning? Obama sends former deputy director of the CIA to Israel to tell them, stop making deals with Al-Qaeda. Stop working with Al-Qaeda. Turn against them, quote unquote, turn against them, you know, from your current position of supporting them directly. Oh, yeah, no, the Israelis, they're our best ally in the whole Middle East. They're the only democracy in the region. They're just great. Yeah, they're backing Al-Qaeda in Syria. Okay, I know, it's true, the USA and Saudi and Qatar and Turkey are too, but still, they're backing the enemies of the American people, if not the enemies of the American empire. And I resent it. And Michael Morell recently went to Israel to tell them to knock it off. Wow. So anyway, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe Obama and the administration didn't send him here to deliver this message. Maybe that's just my wishful thinking. But I don't know. Like, without knowing the details and just seeing the headline, don't you kind of think, wow. Sounds pretty clearly like he's telling them to knock it off. Anyway, Michael Morell. He's a terrible person. I'm not saying he's not a terrible person. I'm just saying, hey, that's a pretty high-ranking terrible person to go over there and say that to the Israelis. Formerly high-ranking. Quote-unquote, formerly anyway. I don't know. What do you guys think? I think, you know... I think there's a possibility that he was sent by the National Security State to tell them what's going on. Oh, to tell them what to stop doing, I meant to say. But anyway, nah, you know, I don't know, because then again, you have Garrett's piece for Truth out here. Sunni alliances, Trump, Obama administration's terrorism concerns in Syria. Oh, the new Saudi king wants to double, triple down on his support for terrorists in Syria. You want to directly back Al-Qaeda, but call them the Army of Conquest now. Oh, that sounds really moderate. See, we've rebranded them from Al-Qaeda to the Army of Conquest. The Al-Qaeda Army of Conquest. But, you know, whatever. You say Qaeda, I say Qaeda. I don't know. What the hell? I switch off. Are there any moderate rebel groups left in Syria? Yeah, maybe a little bit here and there. That's France 24, but the answer is no, because it doesn't matter if they are. If they are, they're still nothing but the useful idiots and the shock troops of the Islamic State. You know, everybody says, oh, Assad is in league with the Islamic State because he doesn't attack them directly. Well, they don't attack him directly. Most of the time. Most of the time. But they just use Al-Qaeda and the, you know, whatever so-called factions of the FSA, whatever's left of them, if they exist at all anymore, to take the territory for them, and then they occupy it. And sometimes there are some skirmishes, but then the rebels move on. It's all one big rebellion, splits between Nusra and the Islamic State notwithstanding. The Nusra guys, they probably, that's why they're rebranding. They're as close as you're going to get to moderate. And they're not moderate at all. Man, did I close out that Wall Street Journal article? That Wall Street Journal article where the guy says, you know, you've got to differentiate between demonic and really bad. Or whatever. I forgot what his words were. Maybe I could find it. I still got a couple of minutes. And I can go on about this while I try to find it. Differentiating. They're attacking Hezbollah and calling Hezbollah terrorists and accusing Assad of backing terrorists for hiring Hezbollah to help him. And what they do, they killed 9 members of the Islamic State. 9 leaders. Oh, no. Including some of them were leaders of the Islamic State in Lebanon border attacks. And they are condemned for that. So, let me see here. I got to find a quote from the journal. I do have it here. Raimondo wrote about it, so it was easy to find here. Outright. You got to differentiate between fanaticism and outright monstrosity, said the Saudi prince who they lined up to push this policy. He's talking about the difference between al-Nusra and the Islamic State. Well, the only difference between al-Nusra and the Islamic State is whether they're taking orders from Zawahiri or not. Otherwise, there is no difference between them. They both claim Osama bin Laden. And that ought to be bad enough for you. At this point, we must really differentiate between fanaticism and outright monstrosity. Yeah, okay, well, so fanaticism, those are the guys taking the territory, and outright monstrosity are the guys holding it. Well, I guess we better keep backing fanaticism then. Against, are you ready? The true moderate, in practice, Bashar al-Assad, the evil fascist dictator with the three-piece suit and the clean-shaven chin, and a coalition of minorities, the Alawites, the Shiites, the Marianite, Chaldean and Assyrian Christians, a portion of the Kurds, and a good percentage of the Sunni Arabs as well. They're the moderates against the Islamic State, but never mind that. Led by Israel, America, Turkey, Saudi, all fighting for the American people's enemies, Al-Qaeda and Syria.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Wrapping up here for the day. I'm noon to 2 Eastern time here on the Liberty Radio Network. Man, did you guys see that thing where it's all six Star Wars movies playing at once with all the audio too? It was on Dig yesterday. I watched the whole damn thing. I wish I had eaten some LSD first, but anyway, it was pretty good, man. That goddamn brain is all still scrambled up. Anyway, look at my Twitter feed if you want to find that link. Now hear this.
Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richmond, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks.
All right, y'all, there you go. And yeah, check that out, man. You know, assuming you like me, you like Mises and Rothbard and Ron Paul and Lou Rockwell and this kind of stuff, check it out. Lou Rockwell's book, Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me. It's just gone on sale, the audiobook there. You can find it at audible.com, at amazon.com, in the right-hand margin there at scotthorton.org. Fascism versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell, the audiobook narrated by myself. You know, if you like that kind of thing. All right, so Israel-Palestine. UN report on Gaza finds evidence of war crimes by Israel. And then, you know, Jody Ruderin, who might as well be an agent of the Israeli Foreign Ministry for the crap and the propaganda she writes in the New York Times, hastens to add, as does the UN, and by Palestinian militants. Okay. I mean, I guess that's true. If the lack of laser-guided weaponry means that any attempt at defense with, you know, dumb bombs, dumb rockets, unguidable rockets, risk civilian deaths and are there for war crimes? Is that the rules? And yes, one Israeli child died. I believe a 5-year-old boy was hit by one of these rockets and was killed, which is absolutely horrible. I think maybe there were, what, 2 or 3 other Israeli civilian deaths, and all the rest of the deaths were IDF soldiers who had invaded the Gaza Strip. And, you know, by the way, do you notice this too? I notice this a lot. The people of Gaza referred to as Israel's neighbors, as though it's not a prison, as though the Gaza Strip is not a prison controlled by Israel. When they go to, quote, war against the people of Gaza, it's just a canned hunt. That's all it is. They have nowhere to go. And they killed more than 500 children last year. I mean, they do this all the time, every year and a half or so. Killed more than 1,500 people, repeatedly attacked United Nations schools full of refugees, repeatedly sent propaganda telling the majority minor population of Gaza, drop leaflets on their head telling them, hey, leave this territory and go over there. Not the territory itself. You can't. You're locked in a prison. But, you know, leave this neighborhood and go to that neighborhood. It's a safe zone. We're about to bomb this one. And then when they flee, they bomb that neighborhood too. The one that they were told was the safe zone, which, you know, a lot of that can just be chalked up to government work. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's, you know, direct and deliberate, but how about, if when, Hamas fires, you know, their dumb rockets, their homemade rockets over the wall, if that's a war crime, then what about when the Israelis fire off thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dumb artillery pieces that hit within 100 meters or more is considered their, you know, error space or whatever, you know, whatever it's called, their range of, possible landing area, whatever. Well, we shoot it that way and we're pretty much trying to get right around over there, but sometimes it might land over here or over there a little bit. Dumb bombs, just as dumb as Hamas's homemade rockets. And they call them rockets because they're not missiles. They're just rockets. And they're made out of pipe. They're made in garages. They're not 21st century weapons in any sense. And, you know, Hamas just must be understood for what they are, which is they're the prison trustees. They work for Israel. And they're the, you know, internal security force inside Israel's prison there in the Gaza Strip. And so, oh yeah, sometimes they shoot rockets and claim it's on behalf of the civilians that live there who have no say in it whatsoever. Who the majority and possibly even the super majority of the population of Gaza, the super majority of the population of Gaza could not have participated in the 2006 election whatsoever. Right? They're kids. But, oh, yeah, no. And besides, it was a coalition government. It wasn't even a Hamas government that won. It was a coalition, had to be put together that included Hamas. But then Elliot Abrams and Ehud Olmert, I mean, that's George Bush, too. Bush, Abrams, Olmert, and Mubarak all conspired to funnel guns to Fatah to try to kill Hamas and drive them out of the coalition and take over the Gaza Strip. And the plot failed and all the guns fell into the hands of Hamas, who used them against the Fatah guys and drove them out. And only then did all of Hamas fall into the hands of fall into the hands of Hamas, but still only in the context of the Israeli cage that they're all locked in. So, you know, the way that they try to build in oh, as the Israelis might call it, moral equivalence between the so-called Israeli defense forces and their victims in the Gaza Strip is actually absolutely ridiculous. And I think on its face. Where 18,000 homes were destroyed. They counted 2,200 Palestinians killed. They way lowball it. They said this is on the Israeli side. They cited immense distress and disruption to Israeli civilians, along with $25 million in civilian property damage. Yes, the Israeli population all so shell-shocked. Not that they were ever in any danger, but they were distressed and disrupted whenever that siren would sound. And look, no, the people of Israel, they're civilians too, and they shouldn't have to put up with that. And I'm not defending Hamas, but you look at the context of the situation. For the Israelis to be crying victims here is, you know, it's disgusting, actually. You know? And again, the people of Israel are not the government. The government is the one putting them in that situation. But anyway, the disparity, I guess, is the term I'm looking for, in what the two sides did to each other is obvious enough. And the disparity in who's who. And the Israeli government is completely sovereign over the Gaza Strip. They didn't withdraw anything. They rule it. And they commit war crimes against those people on a regular basis. And they've made it clear that they're never, ever, 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 ever going to let the Palestinian people be free.